to the FTN Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined this evening by Adam Camilleri.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing?
Yeah,
happy
man,
to be here, Paul.
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, I think. The world's in an interesting place.
It is. And look, we are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. And separately, if I can take just a pause for a minute, I know no one comes here to talk about politics or think about politics. But I just like to say, you know, be kind to everybody out there. Some of the issues that we have going on are not necessarily political. And I think we could all benefit from having a little more empathy and a little more understanding for our fellow people with where some of this stuff may be coming from.
Yeah, agreed. All I know, I'm trying not to have a massive opinion because it's not happening on my doorstep. But all I know is that compassion and treating each other with love and respect goes a long way at times like this.
Well, I certainly wanted to mention it here, and it ties into a lot of kind of our core principles in the show. We talk about coming together and realizing what you have in common with someone you have never met. It takes a little collaboration for us all to get through this life.
Yeah, agreed.
Jumping back into our other core principles of Warhammer 40,000, we got some interesting news about match play today.
Amazing news. A lot of, and quite a bit of it when you break it down. I think a lot of people may have seen it coming with the way the new missions are structured. But I certainly think this is an awesome thing they've got going.
Let's unpack it a little bit. So we've got a few community spotlight segments to insert in this show. So it'll be Adam and I, we'll take a break. Yeah, listen to a couple of community spotlight segments, come back, be Adam and I again, getting everybody's feelings and impressions about what they've heard about Ninth and what's coming down the pipe. And then, you know, us digesting what we've seen. So there's a lot packed into this article. Number one, we can kind of look at it and say that doesn't look like a 6x4 table.
Yes. So I think somebody even did some of the math on that and figured out that is closer to 5 foot. Now, I can't speak to the specifics there, but somebody did the math on the inches they had noticed on the plan, like floor plan, how it's 10 inches in instead of being 12 apart. You know, the 20 inches from the yep. cube. And someone's saying that resembles something closer to a 5 foot table, not a 6 foot.
Yep. And that's something that's kind of, we've heard whispers about for a while. And that actually does seem to, I guess, be more in line with what a kitchen table might be.
Yes. Very true. And that's another rumor we had that they were, you know, it was possible we were going to be looking at them trying to downsize the game so it's more accessible for people to just pick up and play on every surface. You don't need to run out and get a beautifully, you know, awesome neoprene mat in order to play the game, which I think is both a good and a bad thing. I like my 6x4. I don't want to lose my 6x4, but I want options for different sized games on different tables, and I want more people to find the game easy to get into and accessible. So it goes both ways. A bit of give and take there.
I don't think that the game will necessarily expect us to redo our furniture to be able to still access the game. I don't think so. I mean, again, this is going in kind of sight unseen. But, you know, they have made it pretty clear that the game will be able to be played on different size boards. And maybe that's good. And maybe the max size does drop a bit. You know, I wouldn't mind a little extra table space to be able to comfortably set a book on or a drink or something and know it's not going to interact or affect the board.
Yeah, that's true. One thing that really jumped out to me is just how many points we're going to be scoring in games now. Like, so, I mean, ITC was a max of 42 points in a game. But now, with just on the secondary objectives, you can score no more than 15 victory points from each secondary objective. But is that 15 each? That's 45 points available just for the secondaries if you can pick three.
I would imagine there not being three, but just from the other side of it, I can tell you that from an American's perspective, we like scoring points.
More is better. Well, that was my assumption. It's like people just like seeing big scores. Like,
yeah, that's why our football games are 47-29. You know,
and basketball's like, you know, usually between the 70 and 110 pointers, either both sides end up somewhere within that range. Everyone likes scoring a lot of points, and lots of points feel good. So I'm not against that, but it was just something that jumped out to me. Like, wow, we're actually just going to have the scoreboards are going to be like a big chunky scoreboard now.
Well, if we have an app, who cares?
That's the other bit they were talking about. So they're saying that the app will go live alongside the new edition. So they're saying, was that the same day? New app will do a number of things, assist players with their games. It will be the ability to build army lists using the updated points, values, and attachments. Awesome. So they'll have an army builder in there, which is, I think that the assumption there was going to just be an army builder for me, but I'm really happy to hear they're doing a lot more of other things with it because there is so much scope for those kind of things.
Yeah, I guess once you have the mechanism in place, then you can start to, you know, plug a lot of things. The same thing that happened with their painting app. I mean, the painting app started as very basic, and now it's I mean, it's great. It's a lot more complex, and they've added to it over time and continue to update it. So I think that's, you know, a nod to them supporting it once it's released, that they've got a precedent with it, with Painting App at least.
I just hope it's a well fleshed out app for the, you know, for 2020, not something that they've been working on for 10 years and hasn't.
Got an 8-bit skin.
I hope it's crisp and clean and user-friendly, and I hope it's as amazing as it can be.
Yeah, well, I think they've got some... It's one of those things, now, when you're... This is what anybody that ever asked, and not many people do, but if you're trying to enter a market, especially one that already has participants, you know what the score is. You know what you have to beat if you want to
be better. Yeah, you know where the bar is.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, they have to be aware of that. So I'm optimistic, very hopefully optimistic.
Yeah, we're talking Battlescribe, aren't we?
Well, there's several. I mean, there's things. I mean, there's been an evolution of things, and there's been some stuff that's come out that hasn't done the trick.
Yeah, absolutely right. And there's even been things that have come out, like the AOS Army Builder. That was just some guy built that himself, and then GW was like, "That's awesome. Can we have it?" And the guy's like, "Yeah, sure."
War Scroll Builder is nice, and the dude that puts it together is a real cool guy. And an amazing painter. I've had him on the show before in the past. Awesome. I mean, you should follow him on Twitter if you don't, because he just puts up amazing Sigmar figure after Sigmar figure after Sigmar figure.
Gold.
Yeah, but it's cool to see people get really deep into the hobby.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I like that.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll come back with a segment from Jim Vessel. And then you and I can talk a little bit about like points and point increases that we've seen in this article. It's going to be an interesting discussion.
Does Jim Vessel need a moniker?
Well, you want to give him one?
I don't know, like the vegan, because he opens vegan restaurants, and he's a lovely man. I adore the guy. It should be the vegan prince. I don't know. The vegan champ. You know how like the Roger Federer is the Swiss master? I don't know.
We'll,
the vegan something.
We'll
someone
work on
in the
that.
Comments.
Bobby
we'll vote on it,
and
then we'll force it upon him. Like that's how these things work. Also, never mind.
We'll see you guys in a minute.
See ya.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com, and don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a community spotlight segment of Forge the Narrative. I'm Paul. I'm joined this evening by Mr. Jim Vessel.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Jim, man, how are you doing tonight?
I'm really good, actually. Really, really good. Excited to talk 40K.
Man, okay. 40K 9th edition is coming up. I want to hear some things from you about what your hopes and dreams. What do you hope that 9th edition brings to you? Now, you mastered 8th. I don't think there was anything left for you to uncover or to learn in 8th. Are you sad to see it go?
Not really. I mean, I think from a timing perspective, like obviously given the worldwide situation, it's actually a great time to do an edition transition because everyone can kind of start off on the right foot, I guess. You know, there's definitely some things and it being a more gentle transition than, say, 7th to 8th, I think I am excited for. Like if this was like a reset edition where, you know, everyone's going to have to get new army books and we're going to be back on indexes for, you know, 7-8 months, a year, whatever, then yeah, I probably would have been a little bit more unhappy. But the fact that we're going to be able to use our codexes and various supplements means that I can start playing right away and hopefully compete right away. We'll see how that happens.
Well, you've got a big figure collection too, so I mean, you might be able to be ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I've been doing to prepare. You know, a lot of people have been asking me, you know, what should I be doing right now to prepare for 9th? I mean, if it was me, I'd be finishing painting. I'd be finishing up as many painting projects as you have, so that picking up those like basics or those, you know, things that you think you'll might or may not need, and then hopefully having a clear painting table so that, like, you know, if the day the edition drops, you realize that, you know, whatever X unit is great, I can quickly, you know, I don't have the guilt of a pile of shame before I go buy the new hotness. I can kind of quickly transition into grabbing a new unit and painting it and having it on the tabletop quickly so that I can kind of get going right away into events. So
I like that. So get as much done as you possibly can. That way your hobby desk is clean. I'm sitting here looking at a cluttered hobby desk. So I need to apply this to myself.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we don't know what's going to be good, right? Like the way that the rules are changing, it sounds like it's, you know, the game is going to play the same, but we all know how small changes can lead to very big change, small rule changes, sorry, can lead to very big meta changes. You know, if you look at like the flyer rule, for instance, how that has changed over 8th edition and like how that really changed, how the meta shifted as a result of the flyer rule. You know, first it being too good, then it getting nerfed, then it being good again. Like, you know, you notice, you can see kind of very clearly how those units went in and out of lists over the edition. And so I think, you know, it's very hard. And I've seen a lot of speculation and guessing and people kind of sky is falling right now. And I think it's way too early to even be talking about that stuff. I think we really got to like take a deep breath, wait till we see the whole picture, how everything's going to interact together, work together. You know, there's a lot of things changing, not just the rules, the core rules, but also there's points changes coming, and then there's terrain rules coming and mission changes. So all four of those elements are going to combine, and out of that is going to come what essentially becomes the meta. Like, what is good given all four of those, like those dials to turn, what is the meta going to look like? And so I just think it's too early to be like, you know, vehicles are too, if people are saying vehicles are going to be too good, or close combats are going to be too good.
But if all vehicles are too good, is that actually a bad thing? If every single vehicle is good, then...
Yeah, and you know, and I would say outside of flyers, if you actually look at the edition, and you look at what armies have vehicles, basically every army, Space Marines, all Marines do, Guard, Sisters, like I'd say vehicles, we don't see enough of them. Like we see a lot of flyers, and obviously in certain lists you do see some vehicles, but generally they're flying vehicles and things like skimmers. You see very few tracked vehicles. I'd love to be able to play, you know, I have some Predators. I have some, you know, a Vindicator. These are things that like are really cool models that just never see the tabletop because, you know, vehicles are just not good in 8th edition. They die too quickly and, you know, they're too easy to kind of counter. So hopefully we see some rules to kind of help fix that.
Well, you brought up a good point earlier there's a few units in the game, you know, like Ghazghul is good. Gilliman is good. Martarion is good. And you can look at them and they go, they're probably always going to be good. Like somebody could always probably play these guys and do okay with them, but they're almost all the other units need some context, you know, an environment to thrive in.
Yeah. And like, you know, just the way command points and stratagems might work. So how many command points are we going to get? Because, you know, I think about orcs as a great example. You know, there's a reason people build orc lists with triple battalion. It's not because grots are so great, although they are great, or because they want to run 300 boys. It's
they're generally not a grot enthusiast. Most of them are.
Yeah. So generally it's the power of the list. And so if say, you know, and again, I don't want to speculate too much but just say that if all, you know, and a lot of times orc players are going into a game like with 20 CP, 23 CP. But imagine all of a sudden, you know, 2000 point games get 15 CP. So all of a sudden, even without changing any other rules, if you just changed the kind of max amount of CP, all of a sudden that really shifts how that orc list plays because the engine, the CP that's going to drive a lot of those stratagems that make that list chug, fighting twice, shooting twice, you know, green tide, all these different tricks that the orcs have, all of a sudden is not going to get you as far. So even just a single change like how the CP is generated, if they left everything else the same, will drastically shift how the meta is, how the lists play. And we're not just changing just the CP. We're changing points. So that's going to shift it. Terrain is changing. The missions are changing and the core rules are changing. So there's so much changing that like anyone that sees any one rule in a vacuum and says, oh my God, this is going to be good or this is going to be good is just it's impossible. It's just a complete nonsense starter.
Yeah, but Steve, that's kind of that's part of the fun, though. You see something like, oh, I really think that's going to be neat, so let me go and do it. Like, let me go and build all these mega knobs because I think they're going to be awesome, and I'm not going to need as many grots. I'm going to have more points left over for my mega knobs.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's not like there's events we could be talking about right now. So it's not, you know, and there's, you know, usually 40K has a good amount of, you know, competitive drama or... there's lots of other things going on, but obviously that hasn't been happening. So, you know, people have been chomping at the bit to talk 40K and, you know, it's exciting. New edition is exciting. Part of 40K is theory crafting, and that includes things like list theory crafting, but also like rules theory crafting, like speculating. That's, you know, we're all fans of the game. And so talking about it and having those kinds of what if conversations is definitely a fun thing. And I think if you kind of have those conversations in the sense of, hey, let's kind of wish list and have a good conversation about it, that's fine. I just think the issue I've been seeing is there's a lot of like people kind of maybe being a bit more negative, a bit more like,
worried. I think they're worried. I think they're just, I think they're concerned that the way that they perceive the game or the thing that they think they have, I shouldn't say think that, the thing that they have fun with playing now may not be as effective.
Yeah.
How do you cope with that?
That will definitely happen. There's going to be things that, it sounds like Hordes are getting reined in a bit. You know, I'd say if I had to define 8th edition, I'd say it's the addition of Hordes or addition of large, lots of models, board control. That's always been, those types of armies have always been very dominant in 8th edition. So it sounds like those are getting, wheeled in a bit. And, I think some players, myself included, I hear that and I'm like a little worried because, what am I going to do with my 80 cultists or my, 120 demons on foot that I've painted? So what's going to happen there? I'm definitely concerned, but at the end of the day, I'm hoping anyways that, the people that have been involved with this edition, and I don't know everyone that's been involved, but, I do know some of them. I saw the video today they released and, I recognized Ganyo on there. I recognized, a few other of the more competitive players. Obviously, there's some other players as well. And obviously, I know the guys from FLG and Mike Brandt from Nova. They've all been involved. And, at the end of the day, I feel like those players have my interests, have had my interests in mind. Like those are players that will speak for people that play a bit more competitively or that want to play not necessarily even more competitively, but just more, a more balanced game. And, I definitely feel like I'm more reassured. This edition release is like, I've been through lots of edition releases. I know you have too, Paul, through the many years of GW. This is probably the one where I'm like the most hopeful that they got it right because of the fact that how much GW has brought in the community and the playtesters and how much they've involved them. Now we all saw what happened with the Marine book. There's not unlimited faith. There's definitely times where I'm like, GW still, can go astray. But I definitely feel like, the thing that also came to mind is that Marine book was written with ninth in mind. It was like the first ninth edition codex, essentially. So I could imagine something like we've been seeing all these nerfs over the last 6-7 months for Marines, but I could just as easily imagine when the edition drops and we see the whole rule set that they actually undo a lot of that stuff because maybe a lot of those nerfs, they're really good in 8th edition, but in the context of 9th edition, they're not as good. Now, so I could see something like that happening, right? And then the genius of GW will finally be clear that, hey, they were doing the right thing all along.
or we can all agree that writing this many complicated rules can be a little tricky.
Exactly.
But no, I'm right there with you, man. Of course, poking a little bit of fun, but there seems to be the idea just to get some of the models, some of the things about what we have imagined in our minds, even in the narrative side. You've talked about before that you have a strong appreciation for the narrative and the lore. I do too, but when we get down to playing the game, trying to win, some of that stuff disappears. And It seemed like there's kind of a more of a desire to marry those things together again.
Yeah. I mean, I think my favorite, obviously I wouldn't even say 40K is definitely not my favorite Games Workshop game. It's the game I play the most because of the accessibility, because of the amount of people that play it, because of the competitive scene. But my favorite GW games, as far as what game would, if you could play consistently with a great group, would be things like Necromunda, Mordheim. I love Blood Bowl. It's probably my number one. And these games are built around that narrative, persistent kind of team, right? In Mordheim, you have a warband. Necromunda, you have your gang. So these games are my favorite because they bring in those RPG elements. And I've always been an RPG gamer. I loved playing D&D as a kid. So to see that is being implemented in 40K is actually really exciting because the thing I love about, I have my old Skaven Blood Bowl paper rosters. This is before, obviously, people use computers. Paper rosters from 20 years ago with my pencil eraser marks on it after having rewritten them multiple times. It's like an old D&D character sheet that you kind of treat with a bit of reverence. And you have this thing that really brings back a lot of memories about that specific team or that specific, gang. And so I still have some of those that I've kept over the years. And every once in a while, I look back on them and I'm like, man, that was a really fun campaign or whatever. So I'm excited to see them bring some of those elements into 40K. And, I don't know how they're going to incorporate that with the competitive side. And I doubt that there's going to be a ton of that, but I'm excited to kind of see how it how it works. And you know, I could definitely see myself getting as into and involved with my 40K army as I have been in those, like, those other games.
Now, we, on the last show, we mentioned something about, like, armies are going to look how armies should look. And that got some comments like, well, look, we are 40,000 years in the future. What on earth is an army supposed to look like now? Like, what do you feel like? Do you think that we're stuck in the, like, needing army men and troops and that kind of stuff? Or, like, what do you, from what you've learned or what you've heard about how the structure of a battle-forged army is going to be, are you, you know, for, indifferent, against it, or what?
Yeah, I mean, for every edition of games I've played of GW, like 40K and Fantasy, and even Age of Sigmar, the idea of, like, having that core, that troop, that battle line unit, that's been pretty central to every edition. So that hasn't really changed. And then having a few heroes to lead them, that concept hasn't changed. If you think about third edition, you know, you had your force organization chart. If you think about Fantasy, you used to have 50% of your army of core troops. So I think that idea of, like, mostly troops with some characters and then, you know, elite unit here, a heavy support unit there, I still feel like that is the core vision for, like, for me anyways, of, like, what armies should look like. And I feel like that provides, you know, a good, interesting game where it doesn't become, so that's kind of where I think the game, I like that it reinforces that stereotype, I guess, of, like, you know, here's a hero, here's a few troop units, and then throw in your flavor of elites, fast attack, heavy support, or whatever. I actually like that. And I hope it doesn't change too much. I hope we don't start seeing, like, all flyer armies or all, you know, all Terminator armies or all, you know, whatever armies outside of a few very special, you know, themed specific like armies. Okay. Like, obviously Ravenwing and Deathwing have, like, those kinds of things, or White Scars, for instance. You know, seeing, like, an all bike White Scars army, that would be really cool. But, like, I like that idea that armies look like the way armies should, and I doubt GW's gone too far off that.
All right.
With what we're seeing here.
So your Soldrakers army, yeah, outstanding.
Yeah,
we've talked about that before. Are you excited about the new Primaris models you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, like, it's always funny seeing them drop more Primaris stuff. I don't think anyone is like, oh my god, I can't believe they're releasing more Primaris stuff. Like, we're so surprised. Like, we all knew that there was more Primaris stuff coming. This is not going to be the last of it. There's all sorts of potato cam photos floating out there of, like, things that they haven't shown. I would imagine there's still models, like, from the original, like, Shadow Sphere box, like, the guys with the, that aren't released individually.
I think it's really interesting. Is not individual yet.
Yeah, there's some models. There's still models that they haven't released yet, which is kind of weird. You can't get them individually. Like, the Shadow Sphere stuff you can get in that battalion box, but you can't just get a unit of the autocannon flying dudes. I don't know what they're called. You know what I'm talking about. Like, you can't just buy those. I know there's more Primaris stuff.
Suppressors.
Suppressors, that's what they're called. And I remember, I don't know if you listen to Voxcast, which is the Games Workshop, it's like their 40K podcast, but they had a Jess Goodwin on quite some time ago talking about the Marine Range refresh and how they were kind of approaching it. And one of the things that he mentioned was that, you know, they have years, and you got to remember these things lead time for these models that we're seeing. They were designed 2-3 years ago. Like, these are not things that they just did in the last, like, you know, 12 months. Like, these are probably getting put into production 12 months ago. So, and painted 12 months ago. So that's kind of the lead times we're talking here. So, you know, he mentioned that they had, like, 3-5 years worth of essentially refresh. And that's kind of what Primaris is. They wanted to refresh the whole Marine range, but do it in a way that people could still use their existing stuff. So they came up with the Primaris. So yeah, so I'm excited to see it. I like that they have more character. You know, one of the things that Jess also talked about, which I think is really interesting, is the base Primaris. So most Primaris have a very clean aesthetic. And then their idea was that they could, by adding more, like, visual language, they'd be able to differentiate different types of Primaris. So what we're seeing in the set is, like, a lot more of that kind of crusade, gothic, you know, loincloth, or not loincloths, like robes. Loincloths would be interesting. Robes and, like, you know, a lot more, like, crosses, and just, like, a lot more of, like, a lived in feel. Like, these Marines have now, they're not these, like, brand new Primaris that were just pumped out of the forge world. These guys have been crusading for 200 years, 300 years. They've been, you know, in there And they're starting to kind of converge a lot closer to like what you see with regular baby Marines, which are like covered in all sorts of like, you know, little bits of like armor and like purity seals and all this kinds of other stuff. So I'm really excited. Some of the new models look obviously amazing. The bikers look awesome. I'm definitely going to pick up one, possibly two starter sets just for the Marines, but the Necrons look so good too. So
I don't know what I'm going to do with those. The Necrons have needed this. I mean, for a long time they've needed it. Now, good, you know, Necrons look a certain way and an army of those robots looks pretty cool when they're all together. I give them that. And they lend themselves to some modeling and stuff that not everyone takes advantage of. Like you can get pretty creative with the armor plates and the Gauss and all that stuff. But
yeah,
these models don't make you work for it. You know, you've got some cool stuff on the model.
Yeah, like I remember when the original like Green Rod Necron, I'm sure you do too, Green Rod Necrons were released, and they were like the Green Rods were like groundbreaking at the time, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, rest in peace Green Rods. It sounds like that's the end of that green plastic. Finally, you know, I think over the years everyone started looking back at it and realizing it was super tacky. Yeah, at the time it was groundbreaking, and the Necron models is very much tempting me to start a Necron army. So yeah. I think that one would,
what a starter set looks like. What comes, how close do you get in a starter set and which models? Yeah.
But even some of those bigger showpiece models, they just look so cool. Like that Satan dude. And then the Silent King looks awesome. So hopefully there's the stuff rules in
that picture. They haven't given us any clear shots of yet.
Yeah. It's got a very cool vibe. So I'm interested to see what the rules are like. I would imagine they're probably going to be the first codex. Like I doubt we're going to see a Space Marine codex right out of the gates, but I imagine we could see a Necron codex right out of the gates. So that'll be interesting. And hopefully the rules match the splendor of the models.
that's our dream, right? It's what we all hope for everything.
I guess so.
All right, Jim. Well, hey, man, thanks for taking the time with me. And this has been great. And hopefully after the edition drops, we can have you back on again and tell us what you think about it.
Yeah, I'm sure, anytime you guys want to hear me complain about how GW is treating Chaos, I'm ready to go. And I'm sure as the rules come out, I'm happy to discuss them as well.
All right, man. Have a good night.
Okay, man. Thanks, Paul.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/ForgeTheNarrative.
We are back, and we heard this before, but points are going to be changing. Points are going to be changing, set level command points. We got some info about that.
Yeah, so the first bit is the army size bit. So they've got the combat patrol at the 500 points limit, and for that you get, that comes with 3 command points. And so then you've got incursion at 1,000 for 6, strike force at 2,000 for 12, et cetera, et cetera. They're so telling of the direction they're going with this. They're standardizing points and command points across the board. What do you think?
Yeah, so just my initial impression of this was like, awesome, yeah, let's do it, all right? And then I thought, well, I think we need a little bit more granularity in this. You know, we need a 2,500 before we hit a 3,000.
3,000. And I thought we'd need a 1,500 before we hit a 2,000.
Yeah, 1,750 or something.
Exactly. I was about to say, there are a lot of increments between 1,500 and 2,000 that people love playing games at.
Now, maybe we're just seeing, one section. And we're seeing points right now. We're not seeing power level. I would bet there's a chart for power level.
That's exactly the same. That has, combat patrol, power level, command points.
Yeah, something like that. And 12 command points for what we now, let's just say that a 2,000 point game is a 2,000 point. And I also don't want to take for granted that we're going to continue playing 2,000 points.
Mm.
In the past, we've played 1850. We've played 1750 for a period of time. Hovered around 2,000 points for most of the time. But we as a competitive tournament going group have changed points. It's, a couple times in our history.
Mm. Absolutely, and it's not even a real true. So I don't think of it as purely from the competitive point of view. It's just the size of the game that feels right for the most amount of people.
Yeah, you get the right amount of models.
Yeah, my army feels like I like it to feel at this around this amount of points. Anything less feels a bit too lean. Anything more feels a bit too much. Things start to get silly. Everyone gets to have the best of everything. I've felt that like until the rule of three came in, 2,000 points was too much for this system. I feel like everyone just got the best. I remember I played a game against a gentleman who had, I think it was 50 Dark Reapers. That was his army. He had 50 Dark Reapers and then some stuff to fill out some battalions. I'm like, should that be a thing? Does anybody actually look at that and be like, I'm going to enjoy myself here? No, no one does. No one looks at that guy's army being like, gosh darn, this is going to be a slobber knocker of a good time.
So indicative of the story. This is a... It could be the Dark Reaper Shrine. You've attacked the Dark Reaper Shrine and you get what you get.
But the rule of three, that fixed a lot of issues in my mind, at least, for what I thought was some of the issues with the format being like you just literally take the best of everything all the time. There's no reason not to. And you're even benefiting by doing so. The rule of three was one of the best things they ever did for this game, in my opinion, at least. And so this, it seems like with the rule of three in play, if it remains in play for 9th edition, plus the command points getting standardized across the board, it is going to hurt and benefit armies really interestingly. And the ones I come back to is the Horde army. So the Horde armies, they live and die, live and breathe by their use of command points a lot of the time, that being Nids and Orcs and sometimes Chaos. But whereas 12 command points isn't a lot of command points for those armies. Orc army, 12 command points, they'll burn that at the top of turn one. Be like, bang, there's my 12 command points gone, baby. Shut up against the wall. I mean, I kicked your ass, but now I have 0 command points. Whereas I am seriously like excited for what a Custode's army could do with 12 command points.
Yeah, there have been plenty of army lists that I've built in 8th that had not 9 or fewer. Like, I would start the game with 6 command points.
I took a Tau army to WTC in 20, was it? Yeah, last year, with 5 command points. And I took that to the top level of the game, as far as I'm concerned. Country versus country, 5 command points. Yeah. But see, that's Tau. Tau can get away with that.
Sure, like, but now you would have, that same army you're entering in would 12.
Have had 12. Yeah. But the difference is that 12 doesn't benefit me as much as other armies. Like, I mean, I'll come back to Custodes again. To my mind, Custodes have the best and well-fleshed-out stratagem pages. Like, if you went through their pages, the only literal thing they're missing is a fight against strat. If you apart from a fight against strat, you can do everything in that book.
Sure.
But they've never had the...
Negate things. Buff yourself. Yep.
Turn off Overwatch. Pile in and consolidates. Like, when you put their Wall of Traits and all their relics and stuff together, apart from fighting twice, you can do just about everything you need to do. And giving them 12 command points now with that toolbox, I'm by Jiminy Willy because I like the idea of that. That sounds very good to me. Yeah. But yeah, at the same time.
But that's okay. It's just going to change, you know, how army lists are built, and that's okay. Exactly. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, and it might not, right? But I think you made mention of it in the last episode of, yeah, maybe you just roll out 10 Killicans or whatever, and
exactly right. There's going to be a complete rebalancing of the game. I think a lot of the armies that live and die by their command points are going to have to look at ways to not. And I think there are ways. I think the books, especially the Orc book is deep enough that you can play it in so many different ways. It's just that Horde, there are so many other things that they have that already benefit playing into the Horde kind of and massing those command points kind of style. I think there's a million other ways you can play that book. And a lot of them are going to become a lot more apparent now, which I'm really excited to see. Like, the dynamics of the game are just going to be completely tipped on their heads. And I think it's really, really exciting.
Well, what we had in every edition of the game, there's always a disparity in codexes. And, you know, we often had this kind of like soft ranking mechanism of codex. Oh, that's an A tier. That's an A list. That's a B list. That's a high B, you know, or whatever. And it seems like, or at least what I'm hoping is, that everything moves up into at least that high B category. So nobody feels disadvantaged playing by what the, you know, something that they just have an appreciation for.
Exactly right. And I think that's, when you look at these command points, and then you look at what they did with Psychic Awakening, a lot of the Psychic Awakening bonuses that things got was giving them stuff that their books didn't have. I can tell you right now, as a Dark Angels player, having Deathwing Terminators that can deep strike and assault from 6 inches away, or if you've got a Chappie from needing a 4 on the dice to make a charge from reserve, that was something that they needed. They have all these Deathwing thematic amazing models that were literally gathering dust because there was no viable way to make them work in game. And they gave us a reason. They gave us a way to make them good. Same goes for the Flyer. Same goes for Talamasters and all that stuff. Not that they ever got bad, but, you know. And so this, I think we're seeing a G-Dub going through, if we look back maybe in a year's time, Paul, maybe we can do this. 6 months from now, 40K retrospective, Adam and Paul.
We were so wrong.
Of course you will be. But we're seeing a period of G-Dub leveling the playing field, I believe. At least I feel like it. And now this, the command point stuff is now the next level of the leveling off of everybody kind of starting from the same place. Psychic through the Psychic Awakening buffs, through things like Vigilus, and now the new addition. Maybe we're seeing everything literally for the first time, maybe ever, starting close to being even.
Well, I feel like we'd be missing a trick if we didn't also talk about the point increase of what we saw for Chaos Cultist and Intercessors. Chaos Cultist, new points, 6 points a model. You know, it's only 1 point, but percentage-wise, that's pretty big. And the Intercessors going up by about 20%.
So armies are going to be is that a 20% increase on the – that is a 20% increase on the Cultist, yeah, or is that a little bit more than 20%?
Well, it's going from 5 to 6.
Yeah, I'm absolutely.
What is that? 17% increase? Something.
Yeah, so it's around there. If that holds true across the board, which I think is the hope it will, does that mean that armies are just 20% smaller?
Well, see, okay, we don't know, right? We can. What the logic that I hope that it was applied is doing, you know, an appropriate point adjustment to some of the stuff when you factor in what the new rules are. Like, but I also don't want to see like if vehicles. Are, let's say vehicles are 33% better.
Yep.
But they have a 44% point increase, then they're not 33% better. They're back to being just as poopy as they were before.
Or the other way around, they get 33% better, but they only get 20% more expensive. So they're exponentially increased due to how much everything else has gone up. But this is what J-Dub said. Points values. Firstly, games will play faster with, generally speaking, smaller armies on either side. So generally speaking, I like that they included that. That makes me think there is going to be some differentiation for different forces, things that need to have bigger armies to function at their best, or smaller armies to function at their best. Like, so I don't like the idea of, let's say, Imperial Knights. Like, let's say you can still get 4 Imperial Knights into the new edition, yeah? But everyone else, because right now in the game, you get 4 Imperial Knights and you have about 170, 180 points left over that you can buy one Helverin with or whatever. And that's 4 big knights. That's no Castellans or Valiants. And so you always got this wonky amount of points. But if they all drop 20%, you can still probably get those 4 big knights. But that is a huge difference in your opponents having 20% less anti-tank against your knights, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, I mean, this is – I don't know what – There's an aesthetic piece, right? There's also like, but I just want to have enough models on the table that I feel like the choices that I make with my pieces have an impact, and that it's not just a singular thing. Like, I want to have choices. I want to have the ability to make mistakes because I have X amount of pieces.
That's a really good saying there. I want to have the ability to make mistakes. It's just Iron Hands, you know? Iron Hands are triple repulses. You lost all ability to make a mistake. It's like, I don't need to even consider what my choices are. Target priority, doesn't matter. Everything's going to get shot. Bang! But yeah, I actually really like that line, the ability to make mistakes. You need that. You need granularity to be able to do that. You need choices.
Yeah, and I think we're probably – all that has to be considered, right? I just hope that they've nailed it. That's what, you know, we've talked to the other folks about what their hopes and stuff are. But that's what my hope is. I hope that there's been an even adjustment to points that makes sense for however it interacts in the new rules. I hope that things like terrain, we don't have to like spend our points or CP on it to make it functional. I hope it just comes with some rules that's right.
Yeah, so – I've often thought that there. So I wasn't a huge fan of the stripping down of the rule book to its form was coming into 8th edition. I wasn't a huge. I liked the depth of the last books. The 7th edition codexes. Only after they put out a couple of FAQs towards the end of that edition, clarifying 80% of everyone's rules issues. The game got amazing. The game was awesome. The problem was the bloat and all the specialist formations and the Curian detachments and stuff. They just went to absolute crazy town. But the actual rule book
here is not a good idea.
Yeah, the actual rule book I felt was fine. The rules were okay. They weren't amazing, but they weren't horrible as far as I was concerned. As long as their rules interpretations got fixed up. 8th edition I felt like stripped back a bit too much, more than I wanted, but I could see where they were coming from and I could understand it. And what I think now, I think we're starting to get some chunk added back onto the we're starting to get some meat added back onto the bone, especially in the missions. These look like the most complex missions G-Dub's ever produced. They're not the most complex missions we've played at tournaments by any stretch. As a competitive player, but I'd say these are the most complex and deep missions that they've ever had in a core rulebook. Yeah. Do you think How do you feel about that? You've played more editions than I have.
Yep. And it seems like there's going to be things to do in the missions to where you score points by actions and not just necessarily holding, sitting your butt in one place.
Exactly right.
And there's a lot of... I say that. You're probably still sitting your butt in one place, but you're going to feel like you're doing something different.
Yeah. Well, so I always feel like... So I've written a lot of missions for the tournaments that I've run because I have this big narrative cohort of guys I like to appeal to. And I always want to make sure that there's two things you're doing in each game is moving around the table, e.g. to get objectives and score points, and interacting with your opponent, e.g. shooting, fighting, trying to deny them. And as long as you're trying to tick or ticking those two boxes in some way, shape, or form, the mission can't be terrible. It can be bad, it can be unfun, it can be poorly weighted, but it can't be terrible. As long as you're giving the two players reasons to interact and to move and to actually use their models. And it looks like there's on top of ticking both those boxes in these missions, you're also given what you said before, a lot of choice and a lot of ways to make mistakes. Like you're going to really live and die by those secondary objectives, especially if each one can score 15 points.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. It's going to be crazy, I think. I think it's going to be fun.
Making
army wise, I don't know if we're going to see that. I think initially. We'll see if we really have abandoned the need to take troops and things to get command points, whatever. That's the only trade-off we see right now. There are other trade-offs. We don't know them yet. I think we'll see a push towards more elite armies. And then once we start people using the new point, like really, really becoming one with the new point systems, I think we'll see some of these more economical things, which are normally the troops or the less elite units find their way back to the table.
Yeah, there'll be I can't see us moving, if we move away from troops like wholesale, I can't see us staying away for long. Because I think there'll be a natural middle ground we'll find in the meta where the armies that have really good troops, we'll just keep taking them. Or we'll come back to them or find ways and means of making them worthwhile. I can't see 30 Orc Boys being a horrible choice. I can't just envision it being a horrible choice, you know what I mean? Or 20 Gene Stealers. I can't sit down and be like, and foresee a Tyranid army that doesn't kind of always consider those to be a decent option. Maybe not the best in slot, maybe not the best for their thing, but they're never something you can't not consider, you know?
That's the truth, and nobody wants to fight Gene Stealers. Like, no one has ever said, let me sign up to get those Gene Stealers.
Oh, and you bought 20? Oh, I wish you bought 40. No one ever said that.
So it's kind of hard to remember that they're troops, I guess, right? Because Eldar Guardians are also troops. And
but mind you, before a lot of the bits and pieces got nerfed, how Eldar Guardians used to scare the crap out of me.
You stack buffs on them, or you get a doom on somebody.
Yeah, they'd come down being Yunari, and you'd soul burst them, and they'd be Ulthway anyway on top of Yunari, so they'd be +1 to hit. And then they'd come down and hitting on two, shooting twice with doom and jinx and things, and you just kill a Baneblade with it.
Like, I've lost a Baneblade. Castellan. With a guardian in close combat.
In close combat.
Yeah, this is no joke. Not even. I mean, of course, the Castellan only had two wounds left.
It's the principle that matters.
But when you've shot, but the guardians took a lot of big chunk of the wound off in the shooting phase, and then they're like, you know what?
We're doing it.
Get in there.
Going to be heroes.
Let's take another break and come back with Mini Wargaming Dave, and then we'll jump back with you and I.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a community spotlight segment on Forge the Narrative. I'm Paul, your host. I'm joined this afternoon by Mini Wargaming Dave. Dave Norquist, man. How are you doing?
The Eye of Terror sees all.
Thanks for joining me. I really wanted to talk to you because you embrace this game all around, and you got to be excited about the edition change.
Dude, I'm so excited. It's ridiculous. Like, I got to tell you, like, I was watching the preview last week, right? And I was, with everyone, with the 70,000 plus viewers who are watching at the same time, which is nuts. And there's a lot of things I'm certainly excited for and hopeful for at the same time. So it's good. It's just all around good thing.
Now, I know you have, a little bit of a competitive streak. You like to play some games, but you also are known for playing with what just inspires you.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. That's certainly more my play style than competitive. I would actually say I'm not, like, sure, there's always a competitiveness to, like, maybe winning the game that you're playing. But in terms of, like, proper competitive. I'm not proper competitive. I don't go to tournaments or anything like that.
That's what I mean. Just trying to achieve a particular objective within the confines of whatever that particular game is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You play with what you want to now. Is there anything that you're looking forward to getting on the table with some of the things that we've heard about in Ninth that may have not performed the way you wanted it to in your current games?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of tanks for sure. Like my Blood Angel army, it was 7th edition a lot for the tanks, right? Like the Bale Predators and all of that good stuff that just kind of disappeared. Really, honestly, for 8th edition, for me anyway, for my Blood Angel army, specifically Blood Angel army. So I'm looking forward to that big time because, that's like half my collection for my Blood Angels on my tanks.
This Blood Angel talk is completely unscripted. My listeners often, they comment on how we get Blood Angels worked into almost every conversation. And see, it's just organic. It just happens.
It is organic. Right? Yeah. Honestly, it's like, it's got to be the Dice Gods because, I mean, I don't typically talk about Blood Angels. I'm typically talking about Chaos, right? But for some reason, hey, it was your question. Maybe it's subconscious.
That's what I do. I just beam the seed of it through the ether here. But
the seed. I love that. That's good.
But the Predator with all those flamers on it and then hearing that, random weapons, blast weapons, template weapons, although we've heard specifically about blast and not what were the old school template weapons, may do better against hordes.
Yeah, right? Like that's the exciting part too, because then that kind of brings back, heck, you look at Defy, my Chaos Defiler, he's going to be pie plating it up again, right? Because 8th edition, there wasn't a whole lot of that in 8th edition. It was just like, bring him so he doesn't feel bad. Bring Defy. Okay, all right. He's not that good. But what? Don't tell him that. But yeah, okay, sure. I'll bring him. He's okay.
His heart's in.
Yeah, he tried. Yeah, I mean, Lord Discord makes him a little better, right? But other than that, it's just like, okay. But yeah, that is super exciting.
So we were actually talking on a previous show about how we have to educate maybe a whole new generation of players to what Blast and Template even mean.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, it's like, oh, what's that? What is that, you say? Oh, that was the way of life before.
What do you feel about that though? So I guess let's talk about did you miss it when they went away in 8th, and then how do you feel about that maybe changing? I mean, although I think we just revealed maybe how you feel, but what was your original reaction to when you heard it might change?
That's a good question. So when it did initially change for 8th, where it's like, you shoot one guy or you shoot a horde of guys, it's just the same thing. And they got rid of the actual physical templates. That I liked at the time because of you shoot a character and you can do the same amount of potential output on them, which was cool. Like it could never happen before, maximum one hit before. But I guess it made it so when you're killing hordes, it's like it doesn't have that same explosion feeling effect that you would think a blast template would have. Mm-hmm. So it lost that, right? So my hope is that that comes back, like that feeling, that mechanic, however they work into that and however they make that work, that feeling comes back where you just kind of like crave that moment where, like to me anyway, let's say I'm fighting orcs and I don't even care about the objectives at this point. Like if they have hordes and I got blasts, I feel like I've won if I've just demolished dozens of their guys because of my blast weapons.
Yeah, like him to take 100 guys. You want to be able to pick up a handful of guys at a time,
Yeah. Yeah, there's just a satisfaction with that, man. Like, and I don't know if it's the corn in me, although that's not close combat, but it's still fire and death. I just feel so much fun. Like, it's complete fun factor.
Yeah, I'm with you right there. I think it's going to bring something back to the game that we've missed. That I don't know that we knew that when we first got the news. I think it took some time to kind of play out. Like, this is kind of, it went from being like a neat effect because it was different. And sometimes you did still get those 6 hits and stuff, or, 12 mm-hmm. hits in the case of a 2d6. But mm-hmm. it was kind of, as the addition played out, I think it felt kind of weirder and weirder. And now we're going back to something that maybe is kind of splitting the difference between the two. And I'm excited mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah, me too, man.
Yeah, it's one of those to where, I mean, tanks, I know we talked about tanks, but this newfound, or at least the perception of the freedom the tanks are going to get, not quite so bound by some of the ticky-tack tedium of the rules.
Right. Like, that was the thing. Like, the first time that happened to me, I don't even know how long ago, like just shortly after 8th, when someone didn't even charge the tank. It wasn't even a tank that was charged. It was another unit that was nearby, but they piled into the tank, which sucked because it just completely neutered the tank. And, you know, if that kind of spawned more tactics just by itself. You got to protect your tanks now in a different way that you didn't before. And you got to make them better, especially close. I want to say short range tanks.
Yeah, you've got to inject all this stuff into your list that are just like support mechanisms for this tank. And all you really want to do is make pew pew tank sounds.
Exactly. Right. And the tanks aren't even the strongest to begin with. So when you're adding all this, it just feels like a have to, a must bring in order to make it work. Otherwise, you won't have fun because it'll just fail.
And you feel like we're going away from that.
I feel like we're going. Yeah. Like in a good way. Like we're making it so. All right. Let's make it so it doesn't fail. Let's make it so the lore in the situation would kind of come into play a little bit better. That heck, the tank could just move forward and destroy things and run over it. Like, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, I mean, I don't personally. Well, actually, I was about to say I don't know any tank commanders, but I think I do know at least one tank commander, and I don't know that they would ever be slowed down by somebody trying to get close to their tank.
Right? Yeah. Like, how
in a combat situation, you know.
Like as a narrative player and doing narrative campaigns, I would certainly add a house rule or a campaign rule where that could be possible, and that would add so much flavor to the game. But for like a generalized mechanic to be introduced to the game as a whole, just imagine that, man. That would be cool.
Changing gears just a little bit. See, that was a vehicle pun. I got to work those in every now and then.
I saw what you did there. That was clever.
Do you seem to have a particular affiliation or a appreciation for charging headlong into combat?
Oh, 100%. I love the question. You know what the answer is going to be. The point of question. It's like asking the question about not Blood Angels, but getting a Blood Angel answer. Like, you know what it's going to be. Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite aspect of the game is close combat and just charging and just corning it up, doing the corn phase and just destroying things in close combat. And I think that, and this is again, this is one of my hopes that this new addition with the terrain, especially and how you can kind of basically use that much more to your advantage before you get into close combat. I hope that it rewards you for being brave and running up in the battlefield and using those things to your advantage and actually killing things in close combat and helps to tip the scale a little bit from a shooting game mostly to a close combat a little bit to more so balanced to half and half as much as they can.
Yeah, right? I know it's difficult. It really is a tricky thing, and I can appreciate that to get the shooting and the close combat right. I feel like we've been heavily weighted towards shooting in the last couple of editions. I mean, you could still make close combat work, but there was... You had to have a lot go right for you.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Tau.
But now it seems like we're getting some different rules for fallback, potentially Overwatch.
Yeah. Yeah. And so again, like that would be neat to introduce. So I think, I mean, they took, and from what I gathered, they took a lot of feedback from the community and they've taken the best parts and the worst parts and they've retweaked. And they've listened and tested and compiled this new formula almost where it's, okay, this is what you guys want. This is the best balance. Because they even say themselves, like, this will be the best version of the game that's ever existed. And so I certainly hope they're right about that, right? Like, just from a fun factor perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of the fun factor, the Crusade system, I got a feeling you might be excited about that.
Oh, yeah. That's another one of those. Yes. Yes. Absolutely excited for it because I try to put like a narrative twist on it anyway, right? So if that just makes it so your regular games, your pickup games of 40K, that they could all link to each other and make sense, then that just makes it so much better because what we've been doing for years, we as in Mini Wargaming, what we've been doing for years can just be integrated naturally. And we don't have to impose our gaming will in. We don't have to infuse that, right? It's just there. It's like, okay, look, Crusade. All right, it's matched. It makes sense because of this. It continues because of this. And however exactly that's going to work, I'm excited for it because something exists for it. I don't know like the exact details, obviously, but something exists for it.
It's a structure. Yeah, it's something that you can talk about in a way that no matter where someone is in the world, that they will plainly understand what you're describing. You're not having to convey everything that you've created or made up or what is it, house ruled or whatever into existence.
Right. And who was it that said this in the live stream? I forget who exactly, but I remember hearing this. I remember hearing the scenario where the captain eventually becomes the dreadnought because he dies and he's in, or doesn't, almost dies, and he's interred into the sarcophagus of the dreadnought. So now he's a character dreadnought. And how cool is that? That's just
that is
awesome.
Really exciting. I mean, we could do this. There's nothing preventing you from doing this right now. You know, no. As far as like making modeling choices, you know, where you carry that heraldry forward to different models in your army, you know, or whatever. Right. The guy becomes, he starts out as a sergeant, then he becomes, you know, a lieutenant and then a captain and then a dreadnought or whatever. You could carry that forward, do it with your painting if you wanted to.
Right.
But it seems now, like now it's got more weight and more just texture and right. gravitas, knowing that that could have actually been the same character within the structure of these rules that's in this book.
And you know what? I think the difference is that now it's sanctioned by GW, right? It's, we can, because if it's not sanctioned, we can come up with a million different scenarios and they're all cool. But for some reason, it's just, there's a different feeling when it's sanctioned by them. It's like, yes, this is now something you can do. It just feels so much more legitimate and huge because everyone can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the buzz around the studio? Do you mind sharing some of the feelings from some other folks?
You know what? To be absolutely honest, because currently we're still separate from each other, we don't have the regular day-to-day, daily conversations with each other to know exactly. Like I know in general there's excitement for it and anticipation, but I haven't had specific conversations with people with the other MWG crew specifically about it.
They got to be jazzed though.
Oh yeah, like I know, here's an example, and this is without talking to him, Luca, who's a Necron player. I mean, first off, seeing the Necron love and all the new models and the new edition, like you better believe he's excited for this. He is our resident Necron player. And so like, that's awesome. That's really cool. And I know that. I know, like, all I got to say is, hey, Luca, new Necrons. And then there's a half hour of talking about Necrons and it's awesome.
Yep. God, the Necron players. I mean, it's going to be like upgrading your car from whatever you got fresh out of high school, you know, to a new, you know, Mercedes or Corvette, Lamborghini. Like that's just driving around on those slick models.
And, you know, something I've noticed as well, some of the comments anyway, which aren't necessarily indicative of players as a whole, but it gives you an indication of some of the feelings anyway, where there's all this love for Necrons, right? They're the new, but then you have a lot of Xenos players that are saying, oh man, that sucks. Oh man, okay, that's boring. Oh, what about Eldar love? We want some of that. Yeah, you know, what about Tau? We want more shooting. And there's always this, it's not my army, therefore I'm not as excited about it. So to that, I would say just the fact that there is new stuff coming and there's new edition rules which apply to all armies, and you better believe they're not done. Like they have so much down the in the pipeline.
Yeah.
They got new models. They have new rules and new models for every army that's coming out for this edition, because that's how it's worked for years. And also on top of that, I mean, we're talking about the armies that are winning a lot in tournaments, especially, right? Because I remember specifically seeing an Eldar player say, "Oh man, that sucks. I don't like that." And a bunch of people jumped on it, like, okay, yeah, boohoo, yeah, cry Eldar player who's been top of tournaments for years, and now there's this one thing that makes a change that isn't in your favor, and then you're crying about it. Okay, no sympathy for you.
I think Eldar are going to be okay.
Yeah, I think they'll be fine.
But everyone's going to get some new life breathed into them. I mean, that's one of the things about a new edition is that we're actually going to talk about that a little bit on, I think, this show that we'll release this segment on, is that subtle changes, you know, changes to the fly rule, changes to the fallback rule, you know, just one little tweak here and there radically changes how the army plays, how the game will play out. And so things that weren't necessarily viable before are going to get a new lease on life.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It just, and it, the culmination of all these tweaks makes for a very different flavorful edition, which separates it. And I got to mention this, that the fact that we can still use our old codexes or codices, that's awesome. I'm so glad. Oh man, I was worried.
It absolutely is. Now look, they're going to be replaced. The life cycle of books is that they will exist for a period of time, and then you will have to get a new one.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And we know this, right? We know that's true, but at least it's not like all, whatever it is, 25 books all at once, because that would suck.
Well, when we jumped from 7th to 8th, you know, we were all playing out of the indexes, and that created its own weirdness and complications or whatever, which, I mean, we all lived, right? The game is in a better state than it ever has been, and they're going to continue to go with that. But to know that you can still have some reasonable expectations about what your figures do and how they're going to behave, I think is very comforting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's like, yeah, the stuff, Psychic Awakening, all that stuff, it's still good. Still use it, guys. Your codex, still use it. It's all good. Like, oh, okay, good.
Yeah. God, and the stuff about the Necrons. I mean, I did not imagine that we were going to see that many new models for the line. I mean, I did expect a kit or two, and of course I expected the Silent King, some type of big HQ type stuff. But that's really all the Necrons have had. They've got four or five of the same model type, and then 100 HQs.
Yep.
You know, now we're getting new troops, getting some new vehicles, seemingly a new monolith. I mean. Yeah. And stuff in that picture they haven't even talked about yet.
New army. That's what it feels like. Like just new. If you were to eliminate all the old models and have just the new stuff, like they'd survive almost. It's almost that.
Yeah. So this, jumping back to the Crusade system for a minute, I think this is going to be one of those things that helps bring in some players that have maybe felt like they were detached from the way it has been going, in the same way that the Kill Team and stuff has done.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can agree with that. Yeah, and again, there's that hope, right, where just the overall feeling in general, if you are a new player to 40K, being introduced to the game and playing games with other people isn't so daunting. It's not so intimidating, right? They can just, oh, okay, cool, yeah, I'll start with this. It's a small force, which is why I like the slow grow and the Path of Glory so much, because you can start with a little force, and you just slowly add to it, and you just learn more as you go along, and it's not this huge, massive starting out with 1,500 points. Okay, go. Too overwhelming.
Go get all these kits that you like the look of, which is probably should be the base of anything. You have to like what you're working on. You're not going to be as, into it as you would. So that is a good thing. But then, you know, once you get it on the table, it might not, you might feel like you wasted some of your time. Now you can just kind of go easy with it. Have you been inspired to start anything new?
Vicariously, yes. So, okay, let me qualify what that means. Because, okay, my wife has recently gotten into playing 40K, which after 13 years of being married, never thought that was going to happen, be possible. I recognize that this is probably a dream and I'll wake up in maybe a year, but like, that's awesome, right? So she started with Blood Angels. Oh, here, Blood Angels again, look at that. And then, but she saw the trailer for the new preview, and she saw Sisters of Battle, and she's like, Dave, who are they? I want to play that army. And so I'm like, okay, here it is. Here, this is like the one that she's going to get into, like completely not influenced by me. Cause I was like, oh yeah, play Blood Angels. They're cool. And I can help you out with them. She's like, oh, okay. I kind of like their wings. They're kind of pretty, pretty Blood Angels. And then
hey, lots of gold armor, lots of cool gem blood drops and stuff. I'm right there with her.
And she likes Sanguinary Guard, just to add to that. Like that's her favorite unit. Right. But anyway, like she's like, yeah, I'm learning all this stuff. And she's now diving into the codex. And she's like, she randomly says, oh, hey Dave, did you know that the Mechanicum makes the armor for the sisters? And I'm like, I had no idea. That's cool.
Is that chaos? What kind of chaos is that?
What kind of chaos? And the fact that she is like doing it on her own and she's excited for it. And she's telling me these, like, she now knows a lot more about sisters than I ever did. Cause I don't know much about them. Space nuns. Okay. Fight. Chaos fights. That's all I know. Right?
Check out those stories about the Age of Apostasy. If she hasn't already, that's some very interesting times.
Age of Apostasy. Good to know. I'll mention it to her. And she's a lore, like she loves books in general, right? And so she's very lore driven when she's a lore player. She's like, my death company are going to, here's the butt again. Things happen in threes. There's the third one. My death company, they're going to go forward because that's what they do. They go forward and they die. And then after that, Astaroth takes them away. And so I'm like, whoa, I love it. I love how you're playing lore. That's so awesome.
That is. That's amazing. It's hard not to be inspired by that trailer though. I mean, that's probably some of the best, I guess, a minute for minute animation we've ever seen for Warhammer 40K stuff. And when, I mean, it really does capture what we imagine, at least what I imagine the Sister Battle of doing, you know, standing up with the righteous fury of the Emperor when necessary, then getting hurt and then looking to that faith in the Emperor to heal. And then it works. And so, you know, it all trickles down and inspires it, you know, and then the Space Marines come in. They were Ultramarines, so I, you know, whatever, but.
Not blooded. Yeah. Or, well, you can't really have chaos in there, but maybe they're they're Alpha Legion in disguise, so maybe we can go with that.
Yeah, but I mean, it was awesome. I think a good way to kind of set the tone for everything that they did. So that was, I was blown away watching it.
You know, and I have to agree, because I don't care about Ultramarines, right? Like, whatever, Smurfs, okay. But watching the trailer, like, dang, man, that is cool. Like, I just got so inspired by them teaming up and then fighting the Necrons, combining forces. And again, I don't care about the sisters, but seeing them fight and that thing you were talking about where she healed her hand because of the faith in the Emperor, like, that is cool. That actually gave me chills. I'm like, man, that what they did there is, I think they unlocked the emotional content of what 40K is, because so much of it is grim, dark, and it's hard to relate to things. But I think that really made the characters very human, and it made it so it's like, yeah, I want to play that army because that's cool. Yeah, there's a struggle there.
You can put yourself in their shoes and know that that's what you need to take up. That's the mantle you need to take up and go and battle in this millennium.
That's right. Yeah. And I think they hit the nail on the head there. Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 I'm with you, man. So I don't know that I've started anything brand new, but I'm building some more guard tanks, putting some more guard together. I recently got a Marauder bomber I've always wanted one. Very happy to have it now. And I think, you know, when you hear about the fly rolls or whatever, this is the thing, like how I build, like as a, you know, as a filthy competitor, meta chaser or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I like to spend a little bit of time thinking about what my current army is and how it plays against the field. And I want to think about how I can change to fight what I think is coming out next. And then I like to build, against whatever might be good at fighting that. So it's like a three wolves battling inside me at all times or whatever, but it all translates into me building more models.
Right, right, right. Totally.
So having that just almost rekindled and ignited now with this new edition has been exciting.
You know what? That actually makes a lot of sense. And the funny thing is the end result is the same, no matter what kind of player you are. Either way, you're collecting more models, but it's just for different reasons. And there's nothing back to your original question, right? About like what would adding what's inspiring or what's going to be added to this new edition? Like, what am I going to add or thinking of collecting? And I think, there's certainly some chaos stuff that I don't have right now, like the new Fabius Bile, right? Like, I don't have him, and I want him. And
you're going to make some whatever his mutant soldiers are.
Yeah.
Or do you already have a collection of mutant soldiers?
I have things I could, like, I can market Dave, make them it, but I don't have anything proper where it's like visible. So I guess the answer is no. Okay. I got to accept the truth. I don't have any mutant soldiers,
but you're going to get some now, right?
Oh yeah. We got to get some now.
Okay. Man, I'm looking forward to seeing it. Okay. Where can people catch up with you right now?
YouTube, Mini Wargaming, also the Mini Wargaming website. That's where, we put all of our content. We don't put all of our content on YouTube. We put our free stuff on there. You can become a Vault member on our website, where that's the best way to support us. And you get access to all of the content that we make, all of the battle reports and narrative campaigns. And we also have started writing articles just to add more to the content roster, which, understand, there's others doing that as well. Others that I may know of.
That's awesome, man. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Would you mind if we caught up with you again, like after the edition drops, and see what you're working on and see how maybe your thoughts may have evolved?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Dude, man, I'll be in touch.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Have a great one.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, real quickly, Adam and Paul here again. Actually, let's jump into the spot I did with Peter, our compatriot on the Ocho.
Oh, my baby boy. I love that man.
Yeah, so let's hear it for Peter, and then we'll come back with you and I.
All right.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a community spotlight segment on Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined this afternoon by Peter Colosimo.
Hey, caca.
What's going on, my man?
Man, I'm living a dream. I don't know what kind of dream, but I'm living one.
That's, you know, sometimes just got to pinch yourself.
Yep. Hope to wake up.
for this, I wanted to talk about 9th edition coming out. I mean, you know, obviously there's news, different things are evolving every day. We get a little bit more of a picture painted for us. But as someone who's like deep into what's been happening in 8th, I wanted to get an idea from you about what you were thinking about 9th, what you were looking forward to, if it's changing anything, if you're excited about something. I want to hear about it.
Well, I mean, I'm always excited about a new edition and where it's going to take us. What we saw with 8th was GW getting deeper into the competitive and like the what the people wanted. Like they seem to be listening more and more frequently to the testers, to the people about what we're looking for, what we want. And the game was really good. Sure, we had some blips along the way, but it seemed to be evolving. And what we're seeing from the preview so far has me mostly excited. Like I'm not going to go full bore. I'm not going to go full GW fanboy here and assume that everything's going to be perfect.
That's okay.
But I really like what they've shown so far. I want more. I mean, if they could just give me everything immediately, I would be super happy with that, because I don't like the drip feed. Like, I'm not in a hospital. I don't need an IV of the 40K. I'd like it all at once. But I really like what we're seeing. The proposed changes to make vehicles a little more devastating really intrigues me. Today's announcement where they showed off the new point changes, where basically everything's going up, I like that more than just dropping the kind of competitive points cost, like the competitive point game, what you would play at. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of just upping the points on things. I can discuss that a little further in a minute. And I like what they're doing with this, like the new mission format that they just announced, what they showed off. It's very much like a kind of ITC / Nova, but with really intriguing upside. Some of these new secondaries, this concept of you don't just have to stand somewhere or shoot something, but now they're giving you secondary options like starting a shrine or planting a flag or banner or whatever and doing all these extra stuff. I mean, I'm sure that in game terms, it'll probably just be you're standing somewhere special. But
for a certain period of time and then doing, exactly. You're basically doing the electric slide. I mean, I don't know.
But
I think it still
feels good.
Yeah.
It feels good. And it adds a bit of narrative to the game, which I like. So I'm really impressed. I'm really excited. I love that they've made this new mission set that seems to be kind of focused on bringing everybody together. So we're not sitting on, you know, Adepticon has its own mission set. Nova has its own mission set. ITC, WTC, Joe in his basement has his own mission set, where there's one kind of set that we should expect for the majority of events. My only concern with that will be it'll be a little bit easier to solve metas. But on the other hand, most games, you know, evolve down to one rule set and one mission design, right?
You're going to have an interesting perspective on that, you know, with numbers, you know, which is going to be interesting to talk about as this stuff evolves.
Yeah, and it'll be great to see. I'm really excited about it. As to the points increase thing, I just wanted to talk. We looked when, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago, we talked a lot about how the game was a little too long. That was kind of on a lot of people's minds, because we wanted to televise it, right? It's becoming a bigger thing to try and get all these tournaments on Twitch and on different streaming platforms. But a 3-hour game, it's not conducive to that for like the person that isn't fully invested in the game. And it's also hard on a tournament player to go to an RTT, only get 3 games in, probably don't actually get a like true winner of a tournament. So if we can find any way to cut down the time, that's perfect. There was a lot of talk about dropping to 1750 back then instead of 2000 at our current set. The problem with that was when people tested it, and what I saw when I checked out 1750 events, because I briefly did stats on them and then pulled back because there weren't enough, was that lists just changed to take more smaller bodies, because more bodies on the board is generally better. Mm-hmm. So the game still took roughly the same amount of time, right? If you knew you were playing at a 1750 tournament, you took out if you're playing guard, you drop one of your tank commanders and you take, you know, 90 more guardsmen.
Yeah,
now all of a sudden, the game's taking the exact same amount of time because you have more bodies moving around. But increasing the point cost on everything, and they haven't exactly specified what, but they gave the example of cultists going from 5 to 6 points and intercessors going to 20 points base. That means that those smaller guys are less effective. You're going to see less of them because you're not going to be able to take, you know, 90 more bodies. It really should speed up the game. We may get down to that beautiful 2-hour mark. which I would love to see in competitive events.
All right. All right. Well, that's a bold prediction.
That's my big want.
No. Yeah, we'll take it. I mean, that's if you can play this game in that amount of time then and get the same experience, a fulfilling experience with a where games have a natural conclusion. And that's another thing that I think was a sticking point is that some games just didn't get through to their natural conclusion when it was close.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if it gets down to 2.5, but you know, you're actually getting 6 rounds in, I'll live with that. I mean, I was living with 3 hours, but I like the concept of being able to shorten this game up. So yeah, I'm really, really excited. There are some things that scare me in saying that I like this new vehicle change where they can shoot into combat and everything. I want to see more on that because there are certain things with, say, the vehicle keyword that were already terrifying. And the only way to deal with them was to get them into combat. And now...
Dread Knights. Oh, I'm kidding. That was...
Yeah, like, you know, Leviathan Dreadnoughts. Because... The easy way to deal with those 20 shots was to tag him with one little dude, and then he had to walk away for a turn. Now he doesn't have to. So that's a little scary. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But I'm all in all, and the new terrain rules. Paul, sorry, I'm just like blathering. New terrain rules that might actually work.
Yeah.
Like terrain in 8th edition was like an absolute piece of trash garbage. Anybody that played a lot of it knew. So with fully fleshed out terrain rules, if they exist... This is something that keeps me up at night thinking about how cool it might be to have good terrain for once.
Well, what do you think? With a slant towards thinking about the numbers, what do you think about the cap on the +1/-1 being the case? I mean, like terrain used to give that +1, you know, if you're for cover or whatever, and you either sometimes it mattered and sometimes it didn't. How much do you think that maybe decent terrain rules or at least decent's a bad word, functional terrain rules for the models that we play with, and then that cap of +1/-1 is going to mingle with each other. What do you think about that?
The +1/-1 seems to be only for to hit rolls. That seems to be what they've indicated. That one is one that I'm a little trepidatious about because they've seemed to have built certain codexes around stacking those multipliers. So, and what they've clarified is that you can get up to -5. All that'll do is that if your opponent adds +3 to their attack, they're still sitting at -1. But I don't know. To hit modifiers were definitely a pain in the kind of very brief Elder Flyer meta we had where like Guard couldn't shoot them and there was a lot of other armies that had a real struggle. But I'm not sure they were that big of a deal anymore. So limiting the plus minus, I feel is more... I feel that's more aimed at the casual player than anything. So we'll have to see what they do to the codexes that kind of relied on that, like the units like plague bearers, which used to be a big part of the meta because you could make them, you know, -3 to be hit, and now they'd already lost a lot of flavor because Marines didn't care about -3 to hit; they had full rerolls. So yeah, I'm not sure about that. The big thing for cover terrain for me is if they're adding. And they've seemed to have said so, like abilities to terrain where it's not just true line of sight anymore. So if you have that little bit of a banner sticking up over the top of a tree line, your opponent can blow away your 200-point model. Like that's not going to be a thing anymore. And that intrigues me. And just having, you know, set rules so that you don't have to house rule things like we had to do pretty frequently in ITC, for example. And in Nova, where they were house ruling all these different pieces of terrain, where you know you can't step on top of this thing, and if
this
you're
a
flyer, you can't do it.
Thing,
if this
you
is...
can't do this, you can't do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some of them were just interpretations of GW's rules because GW's rules were so loose when it came to terrain. So having something that's really you know dead on centered is going to be big, and I have faith in it only because like it's the one thing you've heard Reese and Frank. And like Mike Brandt and all these guys complained about for the entirety of 8th edition was the terrain rules were bad. So if these are the guys that helped create these new rules and the one thing they've bitched about this entire time is terrain, then theoretically that was the one thing they focused on the most. So I completely forgot about it until you brought it up because I was so intrigued with these new things that came out like 20 minutes ago. But yeah, because I'm like a squirrel. But terrain, yeah, I'm super excited by terrain. They just, Paul, this edition might be better.
I think you're right. I'm excited. Have you been working on anything? I mean, I know we've all been having some kind of forced isolation going on, and I've been using it, you know, at least folks channeling some of that into modeling and list building and theory and stuff. Have you been working on anything?
I've been painting a lot of models. I took a break for like the last week to really delve into Total War Warhammer 2 because it was on sale, and Val had been pushing it on me again in my life. So I've been playing a lot of that at work, doing some background stuff on my website, 40kstats.com, to get ready for 9th edition, and developing some new statistics or some better statistics, because with BCP and Down Under Pairings getting together, and they've already released their kind of initial stats website that's very good, by the way, if you're looking for individual person stats, like how, you know, X person did, which I love. I'm trying to develop some extra things that I can send to them for when they fully flesh out their system. I've on and off, very rarely now, gotten to talk to Diffie because life has been so difficult. But Josh Diffie, by the way. But I have some ideas that were sent to me from some people that I've built into my own systems that I haven't released to the public yet, but that will make like the granularity that I think a lot of people want for faction performance even better.
That's so cool, man. That's really neat.
And I'm starting potentially a new kind of live cast in the next week or two, depending on when my smoking jacket comes in.
Oh, neat. All right. So are you going to carry forward the stats from 8th edition? Or are you going to wipe it all out? What's your plan? When do you plan on doing that, if you plan on doing anything?
I've already started archiving everything that I have. So there will be an 8th edition archive on the site that you'll be able to access and view all the stats from 8th edition, if you like, for at least a little while, until I end up going over my bandwidth, at which case it may end up disappearing. And then it'll be 9th edition all the way. With the new changes to victory points, where it seems like these games are going to be very high point scoring games, they're saying like each secondary scores 15 points, or maybe that was combined, all secondaries are 15. I have to reread that to be sure, but it sounds like this is going to be like a high scoring game. And so that'll be intriguing. I have to change a few of my formulas to accept that, essentially. So
I like scoring points.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't?
Hey, where can people find you right now?
Well, you can find me on 40kstats.com. Val and I still do 40k Stats Center. Occasionally, we just released, I believe last week, 40k Chat Center, our first episode of that, which is just us chatting with people about changes in the community. We've got a couple more lined up that we'll be pushing out. I'm starting Fireside with the Falcon in about, theoretically, about a week, where I'm going to be just on Twitch some nights, reading 40k short stories for people during this kind of dark time where people can't get out of their house. I figure, why not? I've got a fireplace. I've got a captain's hat. I'll get my smoking jacket. We'll sit down. I'll read you a story, and we'll wait for things to bowl over so we can actually play 40k again.
Heck yeah, that's awesome. If people wanted to experience some electrifying multi-hours of 40K content coverage, they should check us out on the Ocho from our LVO coverage.
Yeah. It was a great time where everyone got to learn just how bad I am at handling technology.
You did amazing. Don't even sweat that, dude. All right. Well, thanks for joining me, man. And everybody check out Peter and his endeavors. We'll, of course, mention them. And can I have you on again soon to talk about some of this stuff?
Dude, whenever you want. I've got all the time in the world.
Awesome, man. Have a great rest of your day.
Ciao. Bye-bye.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/ForgeTheNarrative.
We are back, man. It's kind of cool getting all these other people's perspective.
Dude, what a menagerie of an episode.
Yeah.
All champions.
We got, you know, we kind of ran the spectrum here. So we've got, you know, Jim, who I think a lot of people became aware of Jim when he just took the tournament scene by storm. But if you've been following him on Instagram, you know that he's also an amazing painter. It's so like...
The dude's a freak.
It's weird.
Yeah. He's incredible.
He's so good at all the stuff. Well, you work hard.
He's a triple threat, you know?
Stay good. Yeah.
The guy, like every couple of months, the guy opens a new restaurant, and then he goes and crushes like four tournaments in a row, paints a new army, and opens another restaurant. You're just like, what a amazing dude. Jeez, what else can you say?
And it's so cool to catch up with Dave, you know, with Mini Wargaming. There, I bet, you know, we talk about this in his segment, but you got to expect he's excited about the narrative stuff and just the idea that close combat is going to be even more accessible, I think, in this edition.
Well, that's one thing. If we're cutting down on the amount of firepower people can take by 20%, give or take, you know, in theory crafting, doesn't that mean, doesn't that, you know, tilt back into combat's favor? I'm not sure if it's going to tilt back to mean combat being better than shooting, but surely it can only benefit, right?
Well, I think it has to come down to how terrain interacts with things, which I'm glad it's at least going to be something to consider. What the actual penalty for fallback is, if there is any, who gets to break those rules? Because someone's going to get to break those rules.
Yeah, it's true. Everyone's pretty much got one or two ways to break it now.
Yeah. And then the size of the table. Like if the stats stay the same on everything and things, and the table is shrinking by 6 inches on both sides, 12 inches total, and things can still move 16, 17, 18 inches. I mean, that in it itself is just a huge lift to close combat armies.
It's an exponential increase. Absolutely. Well, I was about to say, if you think about what all those things factor into, like the 20% decrease in army size, it hampers shooting, but it's actually, I feel like it's a backhanded buff to melee. Like, maybe I'm crazy here, but
I'll take it.
When you think about what 10 Death Company can do with enough CP, with 12 CP, let's give or take, like they can kill they can kill half an army by themselves. That they don't need to the 20% less on a let's say you've got a unit of 20 Death Company. You can take 20 Death Company. That's 15, isn't it?
15, yeah.
Yeah, let's say you've got 15 Death Company. You take away 20% of that 15 Death Company, yeah? You've got like 12, 11 guys left. Those 11 guys still kill just about anything they want, you know?
There's no real difference. You're not going to have to make that choice, though, in the Death Company, because you're going to have 20% less scouts is where you're going to have.
But that's what I mean. Like, if you have 15 Death Company and your opponent just has less shooting, doesn't that just make your Death Company better?
It does. Yes.
At some level, in some equation somewhere, melee stuff just got kind of a backhand buff. Not a direct buff, but I feel like they're going to get oomph.
If they can be obscured by an Abuscorus Malefactorum, I don't know what the end of those terrain sets are called.
Literally. So sometimes, you watch the South Park episode, the one with the Simpsons, with the Family Guy, how the Family Guy make the jokes, and they got the dugongs. I think I've made this joke before in here as well. And they got the manatees who just pick up random words out of, like, random balls out of a water tank and push them down a chute. I feel like that's how they get the words. They got the G-Dub has a team of manatees, dugongs or whatever, and they just like, it's just here's the manufactorum-y words. Here's the random stuff, and they're gonna chuck them together. And they got another one. They got different tanks for these manatees. Some of them are specifically for making orc buggy names as well.
Yeah, okay.
They've got one. Yeah,
I'm tracking.
So we've got all the wagon names. Like, so we've got go kart in there. We've got schnaz wagon. We've got. And then, you know, we've got the other one that's got all the boomdackers and the schnozwizzes and the vermicious knits and the wang doodles, like all the Willy Wonka words. They went through the Willy Wonka shows and just wrote down all the words from Willy Wonka and put them in a barrel. And that's how they get their buggy names.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised if Paul leaves that segment in. I mean, he should, obviously. It was gold. But yeah, the Manufactorum Obscurificationisms. I wonder what the rules will be for that stuff. And that's another thing that's going to come into factor for aggressive armies. And like you said, there's going to be this another level added to the game, which will be the terrain rules. And I think of all the changes I've seen, that's what I'm most excited about, because I feel like that's going to have the biggest impact on how I play the game. And of course, we can only reflect these changes back to what we're excited about.
Well, we need Red on next week. Going to have to, and we'll get his opinion on how his berserkers would work in a smaller field, like in a smaller table.
I mean, it's just, he's just going to be like salivating already, isn't he?
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe some ideas about what he would take if everything got a 20% point increase, what he would compromise to still maintain the fact that the number of berserkers he needs to do the business that he has been doing.
Mm.
I think, I mean, what would be a good thought exercise.
So let's say because if it's 6 inches off each side of the board that we're losing, yeah, like, would that mean that an intercessor moves 5 inches instead of six? I don't know.
But codexes are staying the same. So yeah, everybody's going to move the same.
Yeah, they've told us everything's staying the same. So, yeah. So just stuff that's faster just gets better. I suppose that's a big reason why flyers need to be able to go off the board now. The tables are smaller. That just means flyers get worse with these current rule set, yeah?
Let me tell you why you're going to need to get off the board, because I got 30 Sanguinary Guard coming across to see what's up.
That you cannot run away from, because they can just reach everywhere.
With all the cool stratagems and stuff, man.
Yeah.
Gotta get them on the table.
Me too, man. What are you planning? You were working on Meganobs last we chatted. Yeah. What do you want now?
So Meganobs, I just built some Imperial Guard stuff.
Awesome.
Yep.
What'd you build?
I built the Catechin Colonel.
Oh,
and Slime Arbo. So they're going to be ready to go pretty soon. It's going to be a fun project of, because look, I mean, they look like action heroes, and that's,
yeah. Can you get Harker as well?
I have Harker. Yep. I have Harker. I've got all of them so far. I mean, you can't not have them, you know, especially if you're an Imperial Guard collector, pretty much.
Absolutely right.
If you have a faction, you have to get all the,
ones.
Harker's one of my favorite though, rules wise.
I was about to give you a challenge of playing the Last Chances along with Yarrick, Harker, Slime Arbo, and the Colonel in one army, one game, one faction.
Let's do it.
Do it.
I don't think I have all the Last Chances, though.
The challenge has been thrown. Well, what did you say? You're a collector. If you got a, you're failing your people already.
No, Catechin. I have all the Catechins.
Okay.
Fine. I don't have every guard model ever.
Do you have the OG Catechin commander with the bolter and the fist in the air?
Oh yeah.
Oh, he's my boy. He's the best.
Oh yeah. I didn't quite like that guy because anyway, you know how the figure is. But there's also that one, this like the chubby one with his fist in the air with the bolter.
Well, there's two with the fist in the air and the bolter. I was talking about the same guy.
Fist, just a regular fist.
Oh, no, yeah, agreed.
And a bolter. And I made my own company commander out of some Marauder bits. This is a long time ago.
Nice.
Marauder bits. Just a Marauder head, a Catechin dude, and a power fist, and then a Marine bolt pistol.
Sick.
That's one of the coolest things about Imperial Guard. Especially what I use, the bits. You just put the bits all in a thing, and then they come out. You can make them look whatever you want. If you have a random head in there, a random Space Wolf Scout head in there,
Everything's
going to be fun. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to getting this guy, these guys painted up. I have the original Marbo model. It wasn't my favorite. So I actually went, and when I played Marbo back in the day, I would use one of the old Eversor Assassin models.
Sick. Yeah, I suppose that works.
Because he's in the, you know, he's in the black bodysuit. He's got the cool looking pistol and he's got a big knife.
Yeah.
So I'm like, there's my Marbo. Now, and this is saying, damn, I didn't care for the old model too much while I'm playing a whole army. I've got 90 other Catechins on the table. Something about that model just didn't speak to me.
Mm.
But I do have it. So I've got it. But this guy is, of course, another level above. And
yeah,
he's going to try to do them both justice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. Anything? You working on anything?
I'm working on a bunch of 30K stuff. So I'm in the process of building a Derridaeo Dreadnought with the plasma cannons shoulders. I got three Dark Angels upgrade, so Dark Angel Dord Deimos Rhinos, and what else have I got? And the gunners for three Thud guns, three rapier launchers. I've already got the rapier launchers done. I built them to be Thunderfire cannons back in the days of my Black Templars. So yeah, I'm kind of cannibalizing them. Sorry?
Did you get the gunners too?
Yeah, I got the gunners too. So I'm putting the gunners together now.
That's nice. I got a Marauder Destroyer in a trade.
Oof.
It needs
I love that
work.
Thing so much.
It does. It needs a little TLC.
Nice.
But I'm happy to do it. In that trade also came three Baneblades.
What did you trade? Did you trade your firstborn or something? What's going on?
Look, sometimes you just got to move models around.
Yeah.
Models have to find new homes. You need to bring new models into your home. Two of the Baneblades are built though. One is the Stormlord, the one with all the cannons and the cargo capacity, the big Vulcan heavy bolters.
Nice.
One is completely untouched, so I can build it up however I want. And the other is just a regular old Baneblade type chassis. So I'm covered. My bases are covered for super heavies in ninth.
Sick.
Yeah. So we're ready to part the ways of the jungle here and come out with a bunch of tanks.
Yeah. Well, I demand to see pictures of your thing. What is it?
Oh, well, the Marauder.
Marauder. Yeah, I demand pictures. I love that model to death. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And I also picked up three Tech Priest Engine Seers.
Nice.
Yeah, with the assumption that if vehicles get good, I mean, repairing the vehicle seems pretty good too then, right?
Yeah, investing in stuff that'll keep your vehicles up seems logical.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've got, I have a Trojan.
That thing's cool as well.
Well, I mean, it's one that lets you do the rerolls, you know?
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to triple down and double, you know, on vehicles. I already had the Trojan from a previous Filthy Tournament list.
The first tournaments I got podiums at, I was running a single Baneblade and Lehman Russes and stuff, and I can't wait to get back to those kinds of armies.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly be jumping on the vehicle bandwagon should it come around.
I mean, I don't mind. Sometimes I like just pushing around a couple of different units. And if those couple of different units are tanks, I hope the game allows for that, for that all to be fun. Like knights, like you were talking earlier about knights.
Yeah.
I hope the game supports that, whether or not you want to have three or four big models or 50 to 150 smaller models.
Yeah. I mean, see, I'd really hate knights to go back to what people considered them to, well, a lot of people considered knights to be a really unfun element of the game. And I'd hate to see them go back to that, because I think that was how they were in the end of 6th and 7th edition. People thought, I don't want to play against you if you're playing knights.
Never matched up. The rules, you had to create different tournament situations for them. Like, you were constantly having to make rules for them. And sometimes if you just didn't feel like bringing an army with 8 meltaguns, you just had no prayer of interacting. And that was created some weird times. But the missions were designed in a way that knights would have a hard time winning the mission. So it was basically like who had to deal with the, who had to jump on the hand grenade.
Yeah, exactly.
that's not the best situation.
No.
Well, dude, I've enjoyed this. I know we've been a little bit more critical of some of the stuff on this episode, but more just trying to pick it apart and understand it.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of different comprehensions you can put into the game at the moment. You can see things in a lot of different ways. And I like running through those, especially with somebody I enjoy chatting to. So yeah, thanks, dude.
Yeah, no, this is fun. I think it's great to think about this kind of stuff and then to see what the next thing is. Like, that's what we're doing. It's like, oh man. And now we're at the stage. I mean, I'll speak for myself. I don't know about you, but I'm at the stage where I'm looking at it and going, okay, I'm about to make some decisions. I'm going to be making some purchase decisions. I'm going to be making some time investment decisions. And it's getting closer to that because I feel like I've got a decent enough information to mess around with.
Mm, nice, man.
So maybe I'm starting to, I don't know, again, that's why I'm being, critical is probably the best word for it. I'm just looking at it as like, how can I break this?
Well, that's a new addition. That's a new addition stigma for us. Every time we get a new addition, we're like, how am I going to get the most out of these changes?
So on the last show, I mentioned my buddy's shop, Grand Adventures Comics. Mm-hmm. Please check that out. It's Grand Adventures Comics and Games. They are in Tennessee. They have a website. I'll link the website in the show notes. Please check them out. I know that right now everyone, we've got other things to worry about and other things to be buying stuff. But if you are in a position where you can buy some stuff, some hobby stuff, some game stuff, the dude's got a lot of things in his shop that a lot of the other hobby stores don't stock. And so you might be able to, if you're trying to scratch one itch, you might be able to go get that and your GW stuff. Yeah, checking out our friends' places and the sponsors of the show is one of those things that just keeps everything flowing. It makes everybody happy.
Yeah, I just like supporting good people.
Oh, that's it. And Jay from Discount Games, people have heard the ad a lot if they listen to the show. Absolute great guy. I mean, like, that's for your day.
Is that the... And don't forget to talk to Jay about any ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
That's it. And it's you should
stuck in your head.
You should.
That's some good marketing right there. I didn't know I knew that until you said Jay. I'm like, holy crap! I can recite that whole ad.
He is continuing to sponsor with us. That's one of the things we try. I mean, we try to treat our sponsors right, so they continue to want to sponsor us. So it's nice to see it when it all comes together, and with y'all, like the listeners supporting these guys, it all comes back around. I just still want to encourage people to check out these folks' shops because they are like, I think they're good people. They're good examples of people we want in the hobby.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they happen to run a business that is the hobby business.
Yep.
And those things are probably the lowest priority on people's minds right now.
Yep. Yep.
For good reason. And if we can just remind people that if they are in a position to get some stuff from these guys, these are the guys that we would prefer they get stuff from.
I like it.
That's it, man. Well, Adam, I'm sure we're going to be sending a fury of messages about what we're thinking about taking here.
yeah, absolutely.
Stuff. I'm going to, well, it's no spoiler. 30 Sanguinary Guard. That's what I'm taking.
That's right. And hopefully they'll let up on those manatees soon and they can start get back to their best ways.
We'll see you next week, man. Have a good night.
See ya.
would make my day.